John Bemis is being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place at Hutchins Farm on 754 Monument Street on March 29, 2006. John Bemis is 59 years old. I was wondering whether the absolute beauty of this land here at Hutchins Farm was the inspiration for you and Gordon going into farming.
Well, certainly an intriguing question, and frankly one that I hadn't thought of before. It is a beautiful spot, and it's probably understandable that our great-grandfather couldn't resist buying it at auction years ago for that very reason, although he in fact has subsequently manipulated the environment to make it appear a little bit more dramatic. The Monument Street used to run right by the house that is now the condos across the street. He built the stone walls and whatnot to move the road further away, and it's that overview that really
grabs
your attention.
What was your great-grandfather's name?
Well, he's known as Old C.L. Charles Lewis Hutchins, I believe. His son was Gordon Hutchins. My grandfather. At any rate, the story goes my great-grandfather was on his way out to Barre, Massachusetts for the weekend to visit his wife's family. And, but he read that there was an auction here at Pumpitasset Hill, and he had a few things that he had seen on the list that he thought he might like to bid on, so he came by the auction and ended up buying the farm. His son, our grandfather, Gordon, was having graduated from college, was teaching school down in Pennsylvania. We called him up and said, well, you're going to ag school. Sent him to Cornell. My grandfather named again. The farm in those days was significantly larger. It included both the land and the 62 acres we have here on the side of the street, as well as a few extra house lots that my grandfather sold off that are on the side of the street. And then a substantial acreage on the other side of the street. The farm buildings were on the other side of the street, and those are, the remains of those are exist in what is I can't remember the name of the people, but it includes the Connelly's buildings and also those of their neighbors there.
Do you remember the year that your great-grandfather bought the farm at auction?
No, I don't. I don't think Gordon would know that either.
Yeah.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. I think it was around, 1910, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Okay.
Late enough into the 20th century that I think they had an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they were driving out to Barre, so that's how he could come back.
Sure, sure.
And my grandfather had an apple orchard. That was the primary. He had a dairy herd. He used to have a milk group. He grew 5 acres of commercial asparagus that he used to take in the market in Boston. Well, before actually, and perhaps they were in horse and buggy when they came out here, because I think the story I heard was my grandfather used to take the asparagus into the market overnight, and it was a long trip in.
Called right at the correct time.
Called at the appropriate time, and our great-grandfather's purchase of the property, the primary purchase of the property. I think he's had two subsequent purchases of additional acreage. But the initial purchase of the farm and farm buildings proper was in 1887, which obviously they were not in car, but in horse and buggy then, which would explain why when our grandfather was taking things to market in Boston, he took a horse and buggy and spent the night in there before selling asparagus. He had pigs. He had, and he grew currants for one of his favorite crops. The buildings that you sort of see today have been changed dramatically by the present owners, but they were significantly changed as well by our great grandfather. Big idea, man. The house that my parents live in today at 806 Monument is the house that my grandfather built for himself and his family. Although they actually didn't live in it very long. During moving over across the street in with his They lived in it. I think it was built in 1917, and they lived in it until the Second World War ended, at which point they all moved across the street to live more. Resources were limited, and they got together the house across the street. The house that my parents lived in today was run by. But the acreage here that my brother and I farm today was primarily cropland, hay and corn and whatnot for the cows. It was a Guernsey herd, brown and white, pretty rare today. Myself and my older sister, Jerry and Marjorie, are the only two in the family of five that can remember actually going over into the barn across the street when there were still dairy herd there in the farm. Was sold off in the very early 50s for dairy herd and associated products. The farmhouse was sold off as the barn had to the barns. My grandfather lived until the summer of, I guess, the fall of 1969. Keeping himself afloat by occasionally selling off his property, usually for something to do. But very fortunately, he was also involved in the sale of property to Harvard University, but the property now known as the Estabrook Woods, because a significant portion of his land, including was into the woods. He also sold off 75 to 100 acres. Sometime in the 70s to the town of Concord, for the area now known as Punkatasset, by the town. Recreational funds were used for it. Growing up, the pond was a place to swim, and there was a ski hill that was used regularly by locals.
So we're originally talking about several hundred acres.
The farm originally was between 200 and 300 acres, 270 something like that. Just about eat it all up. If you take the 62 acres we have today, the various house lots might amount to 10 acres. Sale to Harvard was over 100 acres, and the sale to the town was 75 acres. They took ice years ago out of Punkatasset. There was a barn over there. I mean, the other intriguing aspect of the past is that barn over there was made out of chestnut. And most of the hill and property was covered with chestnut trees. The blight killed all those off. Sadly, I guess the 1938 hurricane knocked down a lot of what was left. Now my brother and I started farming. We really, during the years we were growing up, the fields that my mother owned were rented out. I believe at first to De Normandy Verrill, who were dairy farmers in Lincoln and Concord, who had a significant dairy. Our memory, referring to the 50s and 60s, was the Madison family over off of Bull Road to 9 Acre Corner and Williams Road hayed the fields. They just took hay off them. They didn't really fertilize them very frequently nor received them, but they had magnificent equipment. Trucks beautifully maintained, gas tanks painted red, and they took just a single crop of hay off, which they would usually start cutting when the relatives visited over the 4th of July. So, and we have fond memories of watching the first person to come over. They had beer coolers in every vehicle, and one lap around the field, and the tractor driver was off with his first can of beer. and we had, for years, we'd find Pabst Blue Ribbon cans around the edge of the field. Now, my brother was a student in engineering at Tufts starting in 1969. He had worked, you know, neither of us, you know, we just looked at the fields basically, but there was an extended family farm up in New Hampshire that my brother had worked on a little bit, paying and whatnot, as he was growing through his teen years. And he spent a whole term of his senior year in high school working on a farm owned by some conservation group up in southern New Hampshire. And as a function of that, he became really interested in conservation and sort of sustainable agricultural ideas, truly at quite a young age, and he sought to pursue that as some course of study which the engineering department at Tufts would not support, but the faculty at the School of Arts and the Liberal Arts did support it, and so he pursued for, I think, 2 years of independent study that involved starting a garden and using composting and whatnot. So I think in 72 or 71 he initiated that venture, and while at the same time he was working for Steve Verrill and his father over at Verrill Farm, their primary vegetable hand in the gardens. So that's how he sort of learned about gardening. And he's been very close to Steve Earle ever since. Those gardens that my brother started here were large enough to provide food both for his parents' family here in Concord, but also large enough so that he took produce that was extra into two health food stores in Cambridge, or one and one in Boston. There was one in the corner of Mount Auburn and Putnam Avenue, and then there was an Erewhon store out heading towards Arlington, still in Cambridge on Mass Ave, and an additional Erewhon store over on Newbury Street in Boston. From the beginning was very organized in this approach, so he would take orders, and these stores were all wanted organic produce. There was no certification process then, but Concord was already had one organic farm, or a farm that was reputed to be organic, and the Perry farm over on Lexington Road.
Really?
They were a Portuguese family, and the organic community of Boston used to come out and principally that they were following sort of old world practices in agriculture and grew wonderful stuff. But most of their production was they sold out of a retail farm stand on Lexington Road. So we weren't really, Gordon wasn't competing with them for the wholesale market. Still, he had some competition from various other small ventures. Those were usually people who would come in with a truck full of produce of one kind or another and go around to the stores peddling it, which always bothered him because he would have orders. Sometimes he'd arrive having presumed an order or having actually taken an order, and then the stores wouldn't take it because they bought from somebody at the door. But right from the beginning, Gordon's focus, in addition to the organic, was a real quality product, and that usually ruled the day in the end.
What about the more local stores in the area?
We never sold in those days to local stores. I got involved with Gordon in 1973, and we started a partnership in 1974. And from time to time, we would sell a little bit locally. I can remember taking peppers, green peppers, and eggplant down to and tomatoes down to the Star Market, Crosby's Star, when it was on Lowell Road, to be astounded that they would just take our produce and put it in their cooler downstairs, which was a cooler that was primarily for dairy and cheese, so it was kept at 33 degrees, which is not just too cold for vegetables. And they would keep our produce there until they sold what they had on display, which would mean that it didn't look any better than what they were selling by the time they sold it. So we didn't really like that. We have always sold when we had extra stuff beyond our usual wholesale markets and our retail farm stand. We have sold to the Napolis of Idlewild Park. They've always been very receptive and supportive, keeping us a good price. We still would be inclined to do that. We also have small accounts now at Concord Provisions, a store that's replaced the liquor store down on Thoreau Street, and Brian takes orders from G-Shop.
When did you and Gordon open up Hutchins Farm the stand here?
Gordon was selling, I don't know whether he used the name Hutchins Farm or not, from 1970 through 72. But we formed a partnership in either 73 or, I think it was probably 73. Gordon and John Bemis, DBA Hutchins Farm, and at that point started a farm stand, which was Serve Yourself at the top of 806 Monument Street. And that worked pretty well. We had a cash box occasionally robbed, but not only twice that I can remember. And that grew fairly rapidly over the years. I think in about 1980, there were two additions to that initial farm stand. Built a cooler out back, and then it was clear that it wasn't big enough, and we didn't really have any farm buildings because, of course, those all went with. We never had access to because those had been sold off by my grandfather years ago. Basically, my mother inherited her, this side of the street, and her sister, who lived out in the west, was beneficiary of the other side of the street. But much of that was sold off by my grandfather before he ever passed away. So in about 1980, we built our present building down here at 754 Michael Street. It was the first thing we ever built that wasn't too small the day we finished it. And it's served us very well ever since. We've expanded the greenhouses over sort of behind 820 Monument Street, and we built this building has two additions. One a roof structure that has the deck off it with a porch for the farm standing, and the other the greenhouse.
What does growing organic mean today?
Well, today, to use the word organic, you need to be certified by one of the agencies that qualifies with the federal government to interpret their rules for growing organically. And they're very strict rules of the really large agribusiness has been able to manipulate them slightly. But the basic concept, which we started farming, I think the first certification ever was in about 1980, and that was done by a Massachusetts division of the New England Organic Farmers Association. But we had been organic before. The basic concept was that commercial agriculture today feeds crops. They put fertilizer on the soil so they can grow crops, and they control insect and diseases by applying materials that kill those products. Pesticides that are usually chemically based. Organic agriculture's basic concept is that they nurture the soil to make the soil healthy, and that a healthy soil will grow healthy crops. And diseases and insects are primarily controlled by the belief that a healthy soil will contribute to the plant's natural capacities to resist disease and insects, supplemented by the use of materials that are naturally occurring, plant-derived or bacteria-derived concentrations of natural occurring materials that sometimes are not particularly selective, but often are only useful against certain specific insects, and therefore will continue to allow for the beneficial development or the development of beneficial bacteria and insects and control those populations that would be detrimental to the production that we're trying to grow. So, one nurtures the soil through soil amendments and compost and rotations of crops. Both rotations of crops that are productive as well as rotations of crops into non-productive crops that are hopefully restoring nitrogen or creating biological activity that will diminish the growth of pathogens that developed over time. So, repeated use for growing vegetables. We certainly are, over the years, aware that we've grown, we've focused on production, and in some ways, we have been conscious of not having long enough rotations and taking land out of production long enough. We haven't had enough land to do that. We've been trying to make significant contributions to the income of three families for the last 20 years, and that involves some levels of production that probably exceed the ideal of rotations and use of land here. We have the farm is presently owned by Gordon and myself and our three sisters. It's run as a partnership business of my brother and myself. There are probably, we say we grow, in our biggest years, which were probably from 1985 to the year 2000. We were growing 40 acres of vegetables. There are at least 10 acres, 12 acres of the 62, I'd say maybe 15 acres of the 62 acres that comprise the farm here on Monument Street that are not capable of being productive. They involve woodland or swamp. But we have supplemented the production here with pieces, extra little pieces of property. For some years we grew 3 or 4 acres of pumpkins, squash, potatoes, tomatoes, corn up at the Beecher property further up on Monument Street. It's also borders the river, so we had access to irrigation there. We farmed for several years a piece of property over behind, or basically between Lowell Road and Estabrook Road, a field that's not visible from the streets anywhere. That land was not irrigable. Could not irrigate it and provide water. So we grew potatoes there, and we grew pumpkins and squash from time to time. As the deer population grew, that became a more challenging venture. The field was difficult to access, and so we gave that up. We also had a small field up at my brother's house, 1501 Monument Street, that we occasionally used for production. And again, that's not land we could irrigate, but it was fairly wet land, so moisture was not usually a problem. In recent years, we've had the lease on the fields over at the sewage treatment plants on Bedford Road, and that's probably a 15-acre field of nice, light sandy loam. Has a pond that we can irrigate. Before we got the lease on it, the Palumbos used to farm corn over there, and then they gave up board and secure release, primarily because the Natural Resource Commission of Dan Monahan required that any plan for the use of the land take into account the breeding cycle of the Atlantic turtle, and Gordon was the only farmer who could write an application to address that issue. So we presume there was some competition for the lease, but we secured it. We still use that field, and it's a wonderful addition to the land that we have here. We do not feel secure that we will have that lease forever. There certainly is a definite likelihood that the sewage treatment plant will expand. And in fact, a quarter of the field at least is property that is owned by the cemetery. And they don't look like they need to expand right away. One never knows.
You have fruit trees, sell apples.
We sell apples, and we basically have fruit trees here on Monument Street in areas where the land is either too rocky or too hilly for us to use it productively for other purposes. For the first 20 years or 25 years, '74 when we put in our first trees, 1997, we used chemical materials in the orchard because there was no one who really knew enough to tell us how to do it organically. We used absolute minimums of those materials following practices that be called IPM, Integrated Pest Management, but even less than that. But there was always pressure by the certifying organizations for us to move towards organic production, which we have now done. It's also true that our production has been diminished some since we've done that. Crops are a little bit less consistent.
That goes with the territory, right?
Well, not entirely.
No?
I think that, in vegetables, through the use of multiple plantings and the other techniques that have been around for a long time, we get pretty reliable production. But apples are perennials, and they've been grown in this area for a long time, and there are lots of pests around. It's a moist environment. We don't live on the top of a hill or up in the mountains. Air drainage is non-existent. We live in a river valley, and that puts a level of moisture in that makes the disease issues in the orchard much more significant than it would be.
What steps have you taken to preserve this land in farming for perpetuity?
Well, let's see if I can get the year right. I think my son was roughly 5 or 6 years old. He was born in 1982, but about 1987 or 1988, we worked with the town and the state. Again, it was Dan Monahan and the Department of Natural Resources, who was a strong ally of ours in this venture, to be included in what's called the Agricultural Preservation Restriction Program that's administered by the state, but involves a required commitment of support from the town. This is a program which has been used most frequently in areas of significant agricultural production, Connecticut River Valley and elsewhere, to preserve truly important pieces of productive land. They've been a little reluctant to commit to agricultural lands in suburban kinds of communities because the value of the land is so high that that their ability to preserve acres is significantly hampered by that, by the need to commit to those large values. Now, this land here was deemed to be very valuable because most of it is developable, and the process requires basically coming up with development plans to show what the value would be, to show what the development rights would be. Ours were high enough so that, in fact, we ended up working out an arrangement whereby we got $600,000 from the town and $600,000 from the state for the development rights for 62 acres, the actual development value of which was $5.5 million. So the rest was a gift
on your part.
On our part. Doesn't do us a lot of good because we don't have enough income for that gift to be. It just throws us off on the alternative minimum tax issue. So it's not really we entered the program not, it was a nice time to get the money that we got. Stock market's done very well since then. So it was a nice arrangement. But we primarily, and I think our siblings have always been very much interested in keeping the land out of development. So it wasn't so much that we feared we were trying to protect ourselves against development, but rather that we recognized that it might be wiser to take the value out of the land so that in the long term there would be no dissension or squabbling in the family over the potential dollars. Have we regretted it? Occasionally, yes. There are requirements that involve scrutiny and communication with our partners in the ownership of the land, the town, the state, that are a little bit challenging. For example, the difficulty in building housing on the land for farm workers. We have to go through a significantly challenging process with our partners in order to get approval.
And there are farm workers do not.
We have one house on a lot here in town, that's adjoining our property. It's a pretty substandard house, but we do have a man and his family who works with us, and he lives there. But we have no housing for farm workers, and that's an issue. It makes it very hard. It forces us to try to rely on recruiting young people who live in the area, which we've always enjoyed doing. Much of our pride over the years has been the nurturing we've been able to apply the youth of Concord and giving them jobs and Washington grew up and had to work. But it's increasingly difficult to rely on that as a source of labor.
How many people do you employ on the average?
Well, in our peak years, we've filled out 2 dozen W-2 forms over the course of the season. We try to keep our field force below 10, because the requirements when you get over 10 are difficult to deal with. Two or three people might work at the farm stand at that time. So, yeah. We feel lucky if we get a couple of people to work for a whole season. Especially nice when people come back for a second year or a third year because they really know what they're doing. But it's very characteristic that we will have to go out and hire a totally new crew in the fall and get us through harvest because everybody goes back to school at the end of harvest.
How has consumer taste and the market evolved and changed over time?
That's an interesting question. The early success market for organic produce was much defined by the macrobiotic movement that existed in Boston. There was a place called the Fushi Institute, Mishu Fushi, Japanese, a man of Japanese descent, had a strong belief that organic produce macrobiotic diet would be a useful tool in helping beat some diseases. And they had a series of houses in the Boston area where people could come to live and be trained and eat according to sort of these principles. And they were a wonderful market that those of us involved in organic production couldn't count on. That was supplemented by sort of early hippie type kinds of approaches to living. I can remember some customers used to sell a lot of carrots because people would juice carrots. Primarily because they were cleansing their system with carrot juice after going on drug binges and things like that. But I can remember a group of people who would wear orange clothes. They had orange hair. Their skin was fairly orange, and they'd write checks in orange ink and they'd buy carrots. I can remember, but that. And in those days, as I said, we were, you know, from a wholesale point of view, we had a ready market because there was not a lot of produce elsewhere in the country that was organic that was coming in. So the health food stores really did rely on us. With the growth of the Boston Food Co-op and the Bread and Circus supermarket chain, which has subsequently been sold and has become Whole Foods, there would have appeared to be a growing market for organic produce in here. In fact, to the contrary, we had real difficulty with that market because they wanted really almost exclusive rights to local production. We couldn't sell our leftovers to them. We had to give them the primary production. And we needed the retail price that we could get at our farm stand in order to support ourselves. And then ultimately those two organizations got together and moved some people that had been produce buyers from here in the east out to the west coast to buy for them year round. And that meant buying significantly out there to justify the cost of salaries of these two workers. And that reduced even further their desire for local production. So we really, and one hears that there's this growing market for organic. In fact, we used to sell enormous quantities of produce to Italians from the city who would come out. They'd bargain for a hard price, but they truly cooked vegetables. We sold a lot more peppers, eggplant, and vegetables that are cooked years ago than we do today. They didn't care whether it was organic or not, they cared that it was good quality and fresh. The market today, though theoretically increasing in organic, is also challenged by the fact that everybody is so busy and in such a hurry today that they really want virtual ready-to-eat food. Mm-hmm. And so from that point of view, we're not a one-stop shop. People have to integrate the produce that they're buying here in with the products that they buy in regular grocery stores. Concord, fortunately, has a strong tradition of farm stands, and there's definitely a feeling that different neighborhoods support different farm stands, whether they're organic or not.
What about restaurants?
There's one restaurant in Boston that is of real value to any farmer, and that's Henrietta's Table. Peter Davis is the chef at the Charles Hotel in Harvard Square. We used to, in our heyday, we would sell $1,400 worth of produce to Peter in a week. Now there's another restaurant in the same hotel that's very high end. At the same time we were delivering $1,400 a week to Peter, we would sell $60 a week to this other restaurant. The facts are most high, we've sold to many other restaurants over the years in Boston, and some of the chefs are friends. One in particular, Anna Sorton, who got her start working with Monsef Madeb down here at Igo Bistro in Concord, is someone who to us that to keep a restaurant profitable, they have to watch their pennies pretty carefully on their purchases. And most restaurants rely heavily on the quality of their fish, their meat, and their vegetables. They can make vegetables. They think they can make vegetables look good, you know, without having to spend a lot of money. So there was a lot of competition for small market. Most restaurants don't buy that much vegetable produce. The single exception to that is Peter Davis, who has a restaurant that probably seats 200. And Peter sells vegetables as much as he's selling the entree meat or whatever else.
He owns the restaurant?
The restaurant's owned by the hotel.
Yeah.
He's the executive chef.
I see.
And he has, for a typical example, to describe Peter and his approach, when winter squash comes in October, Peter will buy 15 bushels butternut squash and have his kitchen staff cut it all up and freeze it so that he can serve organic squash all winter long.
Now, is organic products more expensive? I know in the stores it's more expensive.
It's slightly more expensive. It's not... not as much as it used to be in some ways, and I think it'll become less so. The facts are that this country can produce a lot more food than our own population can consume. So there's a fair degree of downward price pressure, and there's a lot of competition. I tell the story that we would have been totally unable to get into this business any earlier than we did in many ways, because the little window of a really favorable price for the production of a particular vegetable, be it corn or zucchini or whatever, in the Boston area, would be taken by growers in New Jersey who could produce most of the stuff 2 weeks before we could. So by the time, or anyone local could, so by the time local growers could produce something, the price had already come down. There was a lot of the product around. Fortunately, as we got started, there wasn't much produce from New Jersey coming up anymore, because New Jersey was being developed in the market for their product in the Delmar Peninsula in New York was taking most of it. So that allowed us, and we could focus on getting things in early, and we could get 2 or 3 weeks of a really commanding price. What we've tried to do over the years is to establish our own prices and try to keep them free of the pressures of the larger marketplace. To set a fair price and hold that price, of course, across the season. That stable legs is our business, and our customers are generally come to accept. The facts are today, the prices in the supermarkets don't vary that much seasonally. Certainly the margin that the supermarket's getting varies enormously, but they'll keep the same price. Occasionally they'll have discounted prices as leaders, but most supermarkets don't make any money out of their produce. That's not what it's there for. They put it inside the front door to give it the look of fresh produce. They'll sell what they can and throw the rest of it in here.
People's tastes certainly have expanded in what they, had traditionally consumed. So some of the other stands have said that, what used to be only with certain ethnic groups or certain specialty items have become part of the general diet now.
Well, I agree with that in some ways. There are Oriental greens, that are mixed in salad mixes today. There are many more varieties of tomatoes are grown. But nobody's making ratatouille anymore. As I said, eggplant dishes. Cooked vegetables are not as much a part of the diet from my perspective as they used to be. Mm. That which can be eaten raw, salad type kind of thing, that's kind of a lot. But maybe 15 years ago we put a survey out to our customers in hopes that we could not grow some of the traditional vegetables that we felt were not particularly profitable for us to grow.
Lettuce? Okay.
Lettuce is certainly profitable for us. It's probably the most profitable.
Oh.
And it has, over the years, defined our customers more so than any other product. I have to say, last year our lettuce was disappointing. Bringing back our customers with the quality lettuce we had was challenging.
How have changes within the Concord community over time, helped or hurt?
Well, I would generally say that not much has helped. It would be nice to think that all the new people in town, there would be more people interested in organic vegetables and fresh produce. And perhaps that's true. But the busy nature of lives, I think, offsets that potential advantage. The issues that I find have been detrimental are used to have an old farmer, Brad Heath. Leach.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Brad Leach. Yeah.
Brad Leach.
I remember him.
On as our, he was our Board of Health. And if he were to receive a call about a smell from, say, spreading manure, or say, this is those are standard farming practices, no problem. Not true today, you know. Sound pollution, smell pollution, you know, there are issues. We get calls from neighbors. The fire department up here for the first time ever while I was burning 2 months ago because a neighbor had called up. I've never had a fire get out of control in 35 years here, but this year I got a lecture from the fire department. And that was because a neighbor had called.
So you couldn't burn?
No, I could finish up burning, but We can't burn. There are many more regulations about what you can burn, what you can't burn, about everything that you do around. Driving on the roads with farm equipment is hair-raising. The most obvious reason for that is that when the town renovates the road today, they put a curb in. You want to pull over to the side of the road when you're pulling a piece of a harrow, for example, and, or if you're trying to drive on the road with a wide harrow, it's truly dangerous. But more than that, you don't drive very fast when you're on the road with a tractor or a piece of equipment. And the impatience of people on the roads is just unbelievable. They will pass absolutely regardless of where you are within after 10 seconds. They will not wait behind you for longer than 10 seconds. If there's a corner, they'll go behind you. Whatever. It's just truly frightening. There are times today when, you know, our location is, we're not on Route 2. Come to us, if you come from Carlisle, you can come in a direct shot. But if you're coming from Boston, if you're coming from the other side of Concord, you have to get through Concord Center. Well, on weekends in Concord Center, now there are so many events and celebrations and tourists and people coming out from, you know, to bicycle ride or whatever, that there are times people give up trying to get here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have sought to make this a farm that exists on its own production, not on entertainment, but on the sale of food that we have grown. I don't know realistically how long that can truly continue. At some point, there may have to be some more another element that brings people in. Whether it be a restaurant type, you know, food barrel. Barrel is being has captured a strong market as a function of the prepared food. And other farms elsewhere are working a sort of entertainment farm, having a band. We don't have room to park a lot of cars here.
So the whole area of agri-tourism is really not suitable to Hutchins.
No. Having said that, it would be really nice to have a sign at the foot of Monument Street that said Hutchins Farm, Hutchins Organic Farm, at 1.5 miles on up the street, down in front of the Colonial Inn. That would be great. I've been harassed when I put seasonal signs down there.
Harassed by the building inspector?
By some people in town who just say, get them out.
Oh, that's too bad.
But they don't do that much for you on anyways. We don't want to go the way of tourist buses stopping here. No, we don't want to do that. But it would be nice to have more people know about us. Advertising's expensive. The local newspapers are absurd, absolutely absurd. They're living off of the money they make for advertisers. They don't reach that many people. Articles are nice, but they tend to be extremely inaccurate. It's risky subjecting yourself to that exposure. I suppose we have a website now.
Let's indicate what it is.
It's HutchinsFarm.com or something like that. I actually don't know what it is, but I tried to use that a little bit. Mm-hmm.
The town is forming an agricultural committee, and I have seen your name as one of the proposed members. What do you look towards this committee as accomplishing, or the need for this committee?
Well, I think that Concord has a strong history of agriculture. The fact that agriculture even exists in this town is a function of the unique topography of the town. The joining of rivers, the amazingly slight drop of the rivers over the width of the town, and it's a large town. There is significant acreage that is on the edges of water, good land for farming. And it has been productive long enough so that the consciousness of the public that cares about preserving open land had the opportunity, because the land was still open, to engage and to save a good bit of the town. So that there will always be the appearance of an agriculture here in Concord. People are supportive of farmsteads, though certainly those that are on Route 2 have a little bit of an advantage. Having said that, I think that the value of property in town has increased so significantly that the sense of the traditions of the town that, I used to say that that new people moving into town assumed the values and traditions of existing population. I don't believe that. I believe firmly that the new people in town have expectations of a level of service that does bears very little relationship to the traditions of the state. And an example is potential loss of farmland to playing fields, like playing fields as much as the next. But there is some farmland that might be threatened as a function of that. So there needs to be some forum or some. Why not an agricultural committee or commission that can be a sounding board to, as new ideas and plans evolve, that can allow for a formal opportunity for the farming community to express an opinion. I think that's the primary purpose. Listen to, of course, is still a question. The town has chosen not to follow a state program that involves the institutionalization of commissions, agricultural commissions, which have a more formal authority. They've chosen to operate with a committee that is under the Board of Selectmen. It is nominated by the Board of Selectmen. Therefore, can in essence be controlled by the boards.
The agricultural commissions would be through the state?
Well, they are. There was a bill, I believe, passed that set up a system for forming commissions that with a fairly real agenda and some power. We won't have that account. Now, there's been talk that they'll start with a committee and it'll become a commission, but I don't believe that won't happen.
The appointment would still be through the Board of Selectmen?
Perhaps so.
Okay, because yeah. I didn't know if
it was... because the other commissions in town are done through the Board
like historical commission.
Yeah, my wife's on the NRC now.
Yeah.
She was appointed. Yeah, voted. Yeah. But there would be a specific sort of license to practice. What exactly the committee will do, I don't know. In the short run, there is one particular selectman, Phil Benincasa, who has expressed a desire to have a farmer's market sort of in town. I know that his vision is probably not the same as that of the farmers.
Would you have the manpower to have something in the center of town on a particular day of the week from here?
If there were, I think the opinion that I believe, or the approach that I have heard from another farmer, that strongest concept. This, first of all, is the belief that a farmer's market should not be one farm at a time. There's not enough there are those of us who could put on a hell of a show at certain times. But the likelihood of any enough of there being any consistency in a presentation by the various farms in Concord done on a one-to-one basis will not generate any real visibility. To have a day a week for farmers markets here in Concord, I think that might take too much away from farm stands.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a day a month, or a day a year, a season, where all the farms are in a really prominent place, so that the differential wares of the various farms could really be put on display, that would be terrific. And very much bring the population of Concord into greater contact with the farms. There was a farmers market 10 or 15 years ago down at Thoreau Street. That was very good. One day. One year. It was great.
Well, let's do something like that again.
Well, maybe it'll happen. We'll see.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.